Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training proudly present No Borders, No Links, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
My bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King David, not Kevin Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in, and, oh, geez, we're dealing with a bit of a slug cat infestation here, because this week's episode of No Borders, No Race, we are being invaded by the Rain World crew, whose game, Woo! Rain World, finally comes out on March 28th on Steam and PS4. And I would like the crew to kindly introduce themselves.
Hello, No Borders, No Race.
Hi.
Got James here.
Hi.
That's Del. That's Del.
Hello. Hi.
You and her.
I'm Del.
Hi, Del.
Hi.
You go. Oh, yeah. Hello, I'm Yuwa Yokson. I'm the programmer and designer, I guess, on Rainworld.
I'm James. I did the music and the illustrate. No.
You didn't do that. Stop taking Della's trick.
No.
Steal Della's.
I'm James, and I just woke up.
I'm Lydia. I worked on the music and some sound and voice acting for some creatures.
Ah, very cool. Well, for our listeners, you may recognize James and Lydia because they are also known as the duo Bright Primate, who we've had on their show on multiple occasions.
Veterans,
yes, they are veterans of No Borders, No Race, and I'm very happy to always have them on my show.
Thank you, Evan. And who's that? Who's that we got on the other Skype call?
Hi, I'm Joe. I just did the illustrations for Rain World. That's me.
Yes.
They're gorgeous.
So, guys, I know we're currently recovering from PAX East. How was your PAX East 2017?
Oh, it was fantastic. Adult Swim went, totally bonkers on the Rain World display. We had, a 12-foot floating Rain World cube. And we had, a little forest around all of the four consoles that were set up. It was amazing.
And iguana.
We had an iguana.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yep. This was the last gaming event before the launch date, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yes.
Wow. Those 3 years, man. 3 years.
Yeah, and you've been to every single one of them. You've seen the game coming from the alpha all the way here. It's been quite a journey.
it has been an amazing journey seeing it go from that multiplayer alpha that we saw at, what was it, Boston Festival of Indie Games 2013.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, to what it's become being showcased at PAX East this past weekend.
Good memory.
Normally, like, whenever I record a podcast show, I'd be like, all right, it's done. I don't have to listen to it again. This is the first time I actually went back and listened to a podcast show, because 3 years ago, we had you on the show when this was just a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing just how much that Rain World has evolved since then. But we're going to touch more on that just on a little bit. But I did want to ask, because with you guys at PAX East 2017, did you, out of curiosity, before we dive into Rain World itself, did you have a chance to walk around and see any other indie titles that surprised you?
Unfortunately, we were chained to the booth the entire time. Yeah. It was madness.
Yeah.
Like the busiest it's ever been.
Yeah.
So we unfortunately could not really get away from.
And I'm sad.
But it was
too.
Also awesome. Like, it was really popular.
There were a lot of cool booths. Like, I got to like do a quick walk around, but I never really got to like actually look into the games and like actually play anything. Or, you know, it was just a kind of, all right, let's go through. All right, let's see. Oh, this looks interesting. This looks interesting. But I never really got, you know, to figure out exactly what they were, you know.
Yeah, so, you had to like make mental images of swords. It was like, all right, maybe this is something I have to check out later when it comes out, and so
exactly,
on and so forth.
Exactly.
It was kind of rough because our booth was right across from like the indie mega booth and a bunch of like the setup. So I was looking at all this cool stuff that I just couldn't play the entire time. So once the all this madness goes down, I'll have quite a backlog to look into. Yeah. How about you, Evan? What did you see that was good?
Let's see. So, like, we did have like the post Pexy show on the Electric Sisterhood, but I will say that Think of the Children might be like one of like the next big multiplayer party games that I think people are going to have to check out. And I'm going to definitely say Mr. Shifty for a single player experience. Those were like the two that really stood out the most for me.
Those both had really unique art. I'm very curious.
I did glance at Think of the Children, but I didn't really get to see exactly what it was about.
Okay. So basically, your parents, you're trying to keep your children from accidentally killing themselves during a party or a beach or at the supermarket.
Amazing.
It is amazing. It's basically Party Hard in reverse.
Ooh. Okay. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. So you definitely want to check that one out.
Seems geared toward today's more mature gamer demographic.
Absolutely. All right, so as I mentioned in today's episode, we are going to be focusing on Rain World, considering it's been a long, strange journey towards its completion. But as always, we have some great artists and musicians that we're going to be showcasing on this episode. And on today's episode, too, we'll be featuring some Boston-based musicians with the aid of The Record Company, a nonprofit that's helping artists and musicians build a better music scene for Boston. And all the tracks from these three main artists that we're going to be playing will be able to be found on the album Boston Sessions Volume 1 Beast. And I'll tell you now, like, grab this record because you're going to be introduced to quite a lot of talented people on here. And I know from experience, James can talk a bit about how massive the Boston music scene is.
It's amazing. Proud to be a part of it.
Yeah. And of course, we've also got your favorite Japanese artists as well, too, that we're spinning. So remember, as always, if you like what you hear and you want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, Yes Asia, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And today, we're going to start the show off with a new band with some very familiar faces. Familiar if you have listened to No Borders, No Race in the past. I don't know if any of these bands are going to be familiar to the Rain World crew.
We'll see.
We'll see. So the band is called Animus, and they consist of Tsushimamire bassist Yoyoi, who is seriously like one of the best bassists in the world. The Alpes vocalist Julele, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm sorry if I'm not. And drummer Natsuki. And there's also a guitarist, Sakura, who's also a baby dragon. you have to see one of their music videos. Like, it's a baby dragon, and the dragon is riding piggyback on objective management of band Henri. It's amazing. Like, the dragon's on the back of the guy, and he's... You can obviously tell, like, it's a bit of a costume trick of sorts, but it makes it look like that the baby dragon is riding on the guy, and the dragon is playing a guitar at the same time. It is fantastic.
Amazing.
Seems right at my alley.
Yes. So right here, right now, here are Animus with 10.
Oh, 今は三月の影もないこの地に眠る10万の想いを集めてここから Borderline 塗りつぶしながら思い描く世界
From their 2014 album Nano Megane no Himitsu, that was Nano Ripe with Apollo. The group recently saw the departure of bassist Nobuyuki Abe and drummer Yuki Aoyama, but will start touring next month with guest bassist Choko from The Strange Drama and former L Garden drummer Hirotaka Takahashi. And we are back with the Rain World crew, and first off, we're going to talk about the origins. And I guess the first question is, how did you all first meet? Because I recall Take Source being a factor in this meeting.
Yes, that is the origin story, basically. Jor, you want to take it?
Yeah, sure. I started doing Rain World as a dorm room hobby project, basically. Just messing around with the mechanics a little bit. And after about 6 months or so of that, I started to create a little bit more of a coherent world. Like, I had a little bit of an idea that there would be rain, etc. And that's the point where I started the devlog on TickSource.
Now, for people who don't know what a devlog is...
A devlog is a development blog, I think. Might that be correct? Yeah. It's a development blog, so it's basically you post every day, like, what did I do today? How did the project progress? And James was also on TakeSource at that time, and he saw my devlog, and you contacted me, right?
Yeah, definitely. I saw this amazing vision taking shape, and I was so inspired that I became sort of obsessed about it. And I was doing music and sound for video games at the time, and I was deeply concerned that this game was going to come out and have bad sound effects. Like, here you have this like amazing atmospheric world, and if the sound effects were like, I was going to die. I even had a nightmare that the game came out and it had terrible music and sound effects. So I wrote up a bunch of music and I contacted him. I was like, Jor, you've got to let me do the music. And I think the sheer force of my of my interest convinced him.
And the music fitted perfectly. Like, it was, it really captured the mood and like added to the mood another aspect that wasn't there before. So now we have a lot of music for the game, right? We have like 100 tracks.
Yes, more than that. 100 and so many. There's 3.5 hours of music in the game.
Wow.
And what's interesting, when you're doing an indie game, it's sort of, you just have to grab, like, work needs to be done and someone needs to do it. So despite the fact that I got involved just doing the music, I wound up doing level, like, all of the level design, mm-hmm. and I wound up getting so wrapped up in that I didn't have time to do music, which is kind of crazy. So we wound up getting Lydia involved to help out,
do some
music tracks.
Yeah. Specifically, I was very focused on all the different creatures in the game, and I started to try and write tracks that were geared to specific either areas or creatures themselves. That's what I was really interested in.
And then we had, of course, since Jor started as, he's an artist himself, artist and graphic designer, and he was so wrapped up doing the programming that he didn't have time to do the art in the game. So that's where fortunately we were able to hook up with a very talented artist, Del, to breathe life into the illustrations and stuff. But it's funny, we all started kind of in different positions.
Yeah.
What we ended up doing.
Well, I mean, I did the illustrations either way, so.
Yeah, that's true. You didn't start doing sound effects and then move to the illustration.
Well, exactly. Yes.
I would say that I started, what I was doing was more in the marketing area, because James and I were demoing the game for a long time before I got involved with the music. So I did actually move
one
function
true.
To the mm-hmm. other.
You were the booth babe for...
I don't know about that. I was there.
You know she's not a booth babe unless she is wearing bunny ears or cat ears or some sort of animal ears.
Okay, well, no bunny ears.
She wants the slug cat ears. You want the slug cat ears.
I want a slug cat. I want the whole, like, suit, though.
You want, like, the pajama whole setup. What are those called? The,
Kegus?
Yes!
Evan, did you see we had a slug cat cosplayer?
No, I didn't. Where was it? Was it at PAX?
Yeah, PAX East. She has a full suit, the huge tail. She has the spear.
She made cookies that looked like bats.
Bat cookies that she was eating. It was amazing.
Oh my god. Please tell me there are pictures.
Oh yes.
Okay. Oh yeah.
All right. I'll have to see that much later. So one of the things I wanted to touch on, because we had James on the show to promote Ringworld back in 2014, January 2014, episode 36. And at that time, none of you had actually met in person. So I'm curious, when did that finally happen?
That's a really good question.
Probably not too long after that, right? Like 2013, 2014.
Yeah, I think so. It must have been pretty shortly after that, because we wound up, that was for the Kickstarter, right?
Yes.
So after the Kickstarter, there was a PAX showing, and we were signing our deal with Adult Swim, and we hadn't even signed the contract yet, and they already had us at their booth. So we brought Joar in from Sweden, and he was like on an international flight, talking to, like, calling his lawyer to, like, get all the things squared away so we could show at PAX.
This sounds really cool, doesn't it?
You can make business sound cool. Come on.
It was pretty terrifying. But yeah, after that, Joar came and stayed with us for a bit. Showed at PAX.
Yeah.
Will had a good time. I don't think... Del came on board, I think, maybe a year after that?
It was like 2015? Because it was PAX Prime in Seattle. When we first met, when I came on board in 2015.
Yeah. It all happened somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it was in May, I think, sometime around in May. And then you guys, we met at PAX Prime in Seattle a little bit shortly after. And I kind of hung out at the booth, and I was like, oh my, this is a thing.
And actually, the first time all four
and that
was
a lot of fun. Yeah.
Is just 1 year ago, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Last GDC.
Was that for GDC or something?
Yes.
Yeah, we did a talk at GDC, and we all went to that. But yeah, it hasn't, like, being an internet-based team hasn't been a problem.
Not at all, actually.
It's been fun. And it's nice to see each other, like, every once in a while, because we're not sick of each other, so... We're all like, it's so good to see everybody. It's genuinely nice.
Right, it's not like being stuck in a production company with the same people in your little, like, cubicles and such and being like, man, I gotta deal with these folks again. Man!
Yeah, exactly.
It's like colleagues you can just mute.
So, let's talk about the origins of the Slug Cat. And I'm curious if Joar could talk a little bit about how he came up with this animal and how the name, like, first came into fruition.
Yeah, certainly. So I've actually recently decided to be straight about the creation process of the Slug Cat. Like, it's actually just sort of a placeholder character. I needed some sort of character to go on my procedural animation experiment I was doing, and I put some ears on there, and I put the thick, weird, lizard-like tail on there, and the little skinny arms, and the face, and that's how Slug Cat came to be. So it's not necessarily a long design process or anything like that. It's just a lucky coincidence, I guess, that people think it's cute and like it.
How about the name?
And the name is not from us, but from a YouTube commenter. I called it the bear creature originally, which was a
terrible name.
Awful name. But as we uploaded some of the very early videos, someone posted a comment which was just Slug Cat, like no capitalization, no punctuation, no nothing, just Slug Cats. And since then we have been calling it Slug Cat because that's a really good name, contrary.
Right. No one else has a Slug Cat. Only Ringworld has a Slug Cat.
Yeah, yeah. It's very unique and it's descriptive as well, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I'm holding the Slug Cat right now. It's exactly how the character should be, or what it is. It's definitely the main description.
It's funny now, too, because people know Slug Cat more than they know Ringworld. Like, people will go and they'll buy the Slug Cat plush, and then they'll come by the booth and they'll be like, oh, there's a game of this?
Yeah. I was going to bring this up in the next segment, but yes, because Sanchi actually made a Slug Cat plushie, and it's been out for over a year now.
Yeah. They sell out every convention. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Really crazy. I don't even know how to process that, really.
No.
You process it with all the money that they give you afterwards. But yes, I totally recommend. People should totally buy the Slug Cat plushie. It is adorable for all ages. Kids will love it.
You're hired, Evan.
So, at what time did you guys decide to go to Kickstarter to get Rain World funded?
Ooh, that's a good one. Maybe that's for me to take, I think.
Yeah, basically this is where James comes in, because I was doing a hobby project and James jumped on that hobby project, and then James transformed it into something very different.
Yeah, I think, like, for artsy projects, I think it's really hard for an artist to see the value of their own work often. Like, you're doing it for yourself, and you're doing it because you have this interest in, you know, Jawar was doing this little procedural ecosystem that he was putting together, and you just think, oh, this is my cute little thing. But I had like this deep, I thought it was such a resonant idea, and I could see that people on the TIGSource forums and people on Twitter and stuff like that were really picking up on it. I want to do a shout out to Kara Ellison, who was formerly at, do you know that site Rock Paper Shotgun?
Yes, I've heard of Rock Paper Shotgun.
So she was one of the early, like, indie game people on Rock Paper Shotgun, and she did like this whole, she found the game on TIGSource and did this whole write-up about how much she loved it, and people kind of, it really took off. Like, and at that point, it was clear to me that this was something special. Like, you know, there's a million indie games on TIGSource, TIG forums, whatever, but people were just really into the look of this game. They're into the character. There's something about it that really just resonated with people. So I pushed hard to turn it from the bedroom project into something that people could play. And we've been suffering from that decision.
Now, as I mentioned, I had James on the show back in 2014 to first promote the Kickstarter, and right at the end of the segment, I backed it. I gave him $25 to help fund Rain World just a little bit more.
You're a saint.
So, my question is, before Adult Swim Games came into the picture, what was the scope of the game going to be like when you had the idea?
1%. What is that? It grew tremendously. Like, we originally had the version I was working on in my bedroom, which was in another programming language, a programming language from the 90s, which went extinct in the 90s as well, and somehow managed to live on my computer. And that's the environment I was working in. And then we had a game which was incredibly much smaller. It had like a few creatures and a few rooms, and that was that. But then, as we did the Kickstarter and also Adult Swim picked us up, the scope of the project grew tremendously, and it grew even further than we could have imagined, I think, because now we have, what is it, 1,600 screens?
1,600 screens. And then for multiplayer, there's going to be probably hundreds more. It's utter madness. But I think, like, this is kind of what happens when, as an artist, you get like a blank check and people are like, give us more art, and you're like, okay. And then someone's like, we want to pay you to make a bunch of the thing that you want to do, and you're like, okay. But I think we'll see what the reception is, but I think we were pretty able, like, I've been incredibly surprised at how we've been able to keep the concept, I don't want to say tight, but like the aesthetic is really well developed, and we, despite all of like the huge scope changes and all of the additions, it really just feels like one thing. It doesn't feel like we had an idea early on and then another idea that became the game. It was just like, I have the first song that I wrote to pitch my audio concept to Jor is in the game. The very first one.
Wow.
It's in the trailer. And like, some of the, like, as Jor was saying, the first Slug Cat that he did, that's the Slug Cat. That's Yeah, that's it. Early rooms, all stuff like that. We used a lot of the same concepts, so I've been pretty proud that we've been able to keep it such a cohesive vision. I think
there is certainly like a core concept which is exactly the same, and also a core atmosphere, I guess. But then there have been many different like game mechanic decisions and stuff like that that has sort of like changed at different times, and we have gone in one direction and then the other. So it's an interesting combination like that.
I think one interesting point is that initially, as Evan can attest, the first game was mostly focused on multiplayer.
Yeah,
right.
And but to make like a production game, couch local multiplayer isn't like the biggest thing. So for this version, we wound up focusing a lot on having a single player narrative and a huge world to explore. So that was a big departure. But now we're working on the multiplayer component again, and that's a lot of fun. So that'll be coming out afterwards in a post-release thing. But we're kind of excited about it. It's like getting back to the roots, the Rainworld roots.
Yeah. So my question is, what was it about Rainworld that you think made Adult Swim games come to you guys?
Should I take that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking to Steve.
So Steve G is the biz dev for Adult Swim games. Do you know, Evan, do you know Steve?
I think I might have met him at the Hard Rock Cafe party, at the Harmonix party.
Yes, you definitely did. He's super awesome. He's like the nicest guy. But he has like a really tight like image of the games that he likes. If you look at Adult Swim's games, there's definitely like a bit of a thread that goes through them. He really likes good pixel art, kind of like retro-ish mechanics, but like elaborated on, and just general weirdness. So Steve, when we first put up the Kickstarter, he messaged me straight away and was like, "Hey, I've been following Rainworld on TigSource for a long time, but you never put your email address up anywhere, so I could never contact you."
That's on me.
But now the Kickstarter's up. Like, I've got your email address. Are you guys interested? We'd love to publish your game, et cetera, et cetera. Like, see how the Kickstarter goes, and then talk to us afterwards. And we wound up getting, we got like a lot of publisher interest. We had like 12 different publishers that we were talking to after the Kickstarter. And, you know, they were all very nice, but most of them were bigger companies. And it was like, obviously, I was calling in to like some boardroom with a bunch of people in suits, like discussing numbers. And I was talking to Steve, and he was like at a dumpling place on his phone. And I was just like, this just feels right. And it's been a good decision, I think.
I think it's been amazing because, like, 5 years ago, you would never think of Adult Swim Games as being such an indie powerhouse, but they've really transformed themselves.
Yeah, and I'd say, I mean, the team over there is amazing. Like, I love everyone over there, like, family. But Steve is definitely, like, he was kind of the driving engine for this sort of like concept of Adult Swim games. You notice they don't really do like many IP based games. Like, it's not all like Aqua Teen, Hunger Force, MMOs and stuff like that. It's
right.
It's all original games.
Yeah. I think the only one that's like based off of an IP currently is the Rick and Morty VR one.
Yeah. Totally. That's worth it.
Totally worth it.
All right, so we're going to take a musical break, but when we come back, we're going to dive deeper into Rainworld's production. So coming up, we have the first band from the record company's Beast Record, and this group was featured at the Harmonix Rock Band Party at PAX East. They're called Tiger Man Woe, who are actually from my hometown of Lynn, Massachusetts. And they just released a self-titled debut album, too. If you like this particular track, this song is called Alone Time.
I can't hold, I need eyes, I can't wait again. Gotta wake up.
2006 debut album, From Me to You. Yui has since left the solo route and now currently fronts a band called Flower Flower. And we're back with the Rain World crew, and my question now is about, and I know you touched a little bit about this in the previous segment, how much bigger the game became when you signed on to Adult Swim Games?
Much larger. But honestly, I don't think it's because of Adult Swim necessarily. It's just because they gave us the resources to do what we wanted to. I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a short answer. Okay.
to work on it, and that's what we did. And I think it's actually James a lot. You are like responsible, or
it's
however
my
you
fault.
Want to put
it's
it.
Definitely my
it's
fault.
James's fault that the scope is as big as it is.
I really like in games. I really like the exploration of scale. I really like the idea of like crawling up some really vast structure, or like you're kind of this little dot in this huge environment, and that's a lot of work to do. So yeah, that's my fault. But also, I think it's because when we were getting players' feedback, people were really into the game and they wanted to like sink their teeth into this world, and we were willing to provide that. And you know, there's been a lot of scope creep, but.
Yeah, scope creep has been a thing. But now we have a sort of a self-contained world in the game, and it's a big one. It's a big one. So it's all for the better, yeah. I think.
Which I think leads to my next question about the biggest challenges you faced during the game's production. Like, what were some of the things that were, like, the toughest to create in Rain World?
That's a good question. Why don't we each take that?
You go first.
Oh. All right, I'll say... I think the biggest challenge was finding the right people, because we, I don't know, like getting a good team that everyone had the right vision. Everything evolved nicely, but it took a bit of time to get those bits into place. Once they did, though, it was kind of easy sailing. Like, we had challenges that came up, but everyone was producing like amazing quality stuff, and everyone really had the same idea about the game. And so I think we really, really lucked out on that. I don't even think we know how much we lucked out on that. So that's mine.
Yeah. Good answer.
Okay, so I'm gonna go a little bit more specific. I think one big challenge we had was that we had this tiny little game for the old programming language, and then we wanted to make it 50 times as large, and we that we could just lift the same game mechanics from the one scope to the other, and we had sort of a moment when it was like, you know, like the rocket launch, like, okay, here we go. Finally, the game is all connected and we can run through it and play it. And there was like a, this isn't working. and we really had to think hard about like how to make the game mechanics work for this new big game. And I think we came through it okay. But that was like a few weeks, I guess, of like a little bit of desperation.
There was definitely that moment of like, does this game suck? Like,
yeah.
We did all this work and now it's bad.
Sweating no. Bullets.
Yeah, it happens. What do you guys think? Lydia, what's your biggest challenge?
Well, this is just like an observation of like some of what you went through as far as the porting for the PS4.
Oh, yes.
So there was a lot of James testing, which meant like 10 hours of James playing through the game to see if he could get to the end without it crashing. And I was there for the time that he got through and it didn't crash and got all the way to the end. And I was like, we were just like, whoa, it's working. I mean, it was pretty, it was crazy. It was quite the slog, but got through it and it was kind of amazing when it happened.
It was like a year of build-up to like finally get out without it crashing. It was intense. Yeah. Good call, Lydia. What about for you, Del?
I think it's more personal level for me is like, I working from home is really difficult since I'm doing all the art and stuff, and I think that's the biggest challenge for me, but I think it's completely worth it because I love what I'm doing and I love doing all the things that I'm doing, and everything is just awesome right now, so it's completely worth it. I don't know if that completely answers the question, but like that's my little personal struggle.
Well, I can actually kind of relate to you on that, because I find it's really difficult sometimes for me to, like, focus when I'm at home trying to work on things. Whereas compared to, like, when I'm at a convention, like when I was at PAX East, I'm, like, churning out article after article after article after article without any distractions whatsoever. Whereas when I come back at home, I'm like, I gotta sit on my bed, I gotta type on my iPad, I gotta put a record on, to make sure nothing from the outside world distracts me while I write. So get that.
Yeah.
You also get into a certain sort of mood when you haven't, like, changed your clothes for a couple of days. And working from home. It takes down your energy a notch, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I guess there are many, many people who have to get up early every morning and go to a job. And I've been in that situation myself. So I know that it's actually a huge privilege to be able to work from home.
Oh, yeah. I've had jobs for years.
I think you need to, like, have a little bit of both, or, like, be able to go to a, you know, job every day and then work from home, you know, maybe for a few months. But when you're doing it for years and years and years, working from home, it's like, it just becomes this whole other thing that when people, oh man, I wish I could work from home. And then you're just like, no, you don't.
When you work from home for a long time, you wish you have an office. And I suppose if you have an office, you wish you could work from home. Yeah, as always. Yeah.
It's kind of how I feel sometimes. I wish that, like, Electric Sisterhood or Boston Bass Brigade, we had our own office building where we go to every day to work on all this sort of stuff.
Get a co-op space. They're pretty cheap. You can just, and you go in there and you meet, and there's, like, other teams working on stuff. Those are pretty cool. There's a million in Boston, and they're all, like, super nice.
I'll keep that in mind. So, you guys have been working on the game for 5 years, because when I was listening to our old interview, James, it was at the 2-year mark when you guys were, like, in production for this. So I'm curious to know if there was anything remotely different from the main idea that is now non-existent in the final product.
Not so much. I mean, so this initial release, The Rain World, is coming out on March 28th, PlayStation 4 and Steam, is really focused on, it's basically a single player version of the game. And we still have a multiplayer version that's coming out in an update. Once that comes out, I think we'll have all of the stuff that we wanted to put into it there. It's just that component needs a little bit extra time to bake. But other than that, I think pretty much everything. What would you say?
Yeah, everything and more.
Everything and vastly more. Yeah.
More.
The amount of creatures that are in there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's super fun to think about that.
Yeah, I was actually very taken aback by, what was it, the Slugcat riding on the big giant deer on, like, the big giant antlers. It kind of had this Princess Mononoke vibe to it.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's actually kind of a, like, the idea of this huge, active, like, mysterious world of beings.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that Princess Mononoke does really well. All of those Studio Ghibli stuff.
Rain World's almost like a Miyazaki side-scroller in, like, some spiritual sense.
That's some high praise right there.
So, what would you say is the most proudest aspect of Rain World that you've placed in the game? And I guess this is a question for each and every one of you.
You first, Jor.
The proudest aspect.
Yeah, what are you the most proud of in the game? It's like a singular thing.
I think the visuals, the art style. I'm very proud of that. It shows many different objects and, like, big creatures and small creatures and different environments, but it all comes together in a specific style. So, yeah.
I think for me, like, I'm even though the music's pretty old at this point, like, I did most of it, I think, 2 years ago about, I still think it's some of the best music that I've written. Like, I'm really proud of certain pieces of it. I'm really proud of how, like, you'll come across these scenes in the game, these, like, vistas, and the music comes in, and then you have this like atmospheric audio of like drips and wind going on. I'm really proud of that. Like, that's not something I had really done to that level before, and I really just like how it came together. I'm really happy with it.
I don't know. I did music for, it was usually creature related. So my favorite track that I did for the game was for the Garbage Worms. Wormy creatures and who like take away your spear once you get near them. And I was like, this is such a cool concept for a creature. Gotta write some music for that. So yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah, that really sets the theme for that region. It's a great track. Yeah. Del, what about you?
I think the whole experience for me, because this is the biggest thing that I've ever done, and so especially all those intro illustrations, I'm super proud of that, even though I can't really look at the intro anymore because I see all my mistakes and it just makes me really nervous, but I have to look at it like 80 bajillion times in packs. But I'm super proud of that because I've never done anything on this scale before. Like, it's the first like proper game that I've done, even though this is essentially what, you know, my dream was back in high school, that I wanted to do stuff for video games, you know. And then I kind of, in college, I just pushed that away because money. I never thought that I could, you know, do this sort of thing. And here I am, I guess. So I'm just really proud of that. So, like, especially the intro scenes and how Joar added all the parallax and the depth. It came out really, really cool. And so, I don't know, I'm just really proud of that.
Very cool. Those are some great proud moments there. Now, you've been showing off Rain World at many conventions across the world these last couple of years, and I've got to ask, what have been some of your highlights on this Slugcat tour of yours?
I think this one, we've had a lot of good ones. We've always had great times at conventions, but I feel like this last one was just amazing. I mean, mostly because the attention was like focused on us. It was like they had Rain World lanyards, they had Rain World posters that we were signing, they had everything Rain World, it was great. It was good to finally show the game in like a completed state, because I think since we've been showing it for so long, we're always concerned that we're showing too much, that people will be bored of it by the time it came out. So we held a lot of stuff like close to the chest and like didn't like a lot of secret things that now we can talk about openly. And watching people play it and like explore it and like piece together the world, been awesome.
Now, what are you going to miss most about traveling and promoting Rain World, and what are you happy to say good riddance to?
I don't know. I wonder if we're going to stop, like, because we have further updates planned, and we have a release. We're going to be releasing, I don't actually know if I can say this, but I'll say it anyways. There's going to be a version, a Japanese version for PlayStation, which is like one of the first Adult Swim. It's the first Adult Swim game to be in Japan.
Wow! So
we're probably going to go like Tokyo. What's that awesome
Tokyo Game Show?
Yeah,
Tokyo Game Show.
That I want to. There's Busan in Korea has an indie games festival.
Yeah, that Joar went to.
That Joar went to last year.
We'd like to do that.
We're going to use this as an excuse for as long as we can to go places and do things.
That sounds awesome. Wow. So we're going to take another music break, but when we come back, we're going to dive deeper into the actual Rain World experience. So right now, we've got a little bomb factory for you all to enjoy. The band recently celebrated their 25th anniversary with a self-covered record simply titled Cover. From their 2006 album Social Suicide, this is Slick Drive.
Death and the street must arrive. That is where she finds herself stuck on their track. Yeah.
Company's Beast record. That was the rapper duo Still Gold with Good. The duo consists of MC Mo Pop and producer The Archetype, who also just released a new album called Torch Song. And once again, we're here with the Rain World crew, and I guess the first question about the Rain World experience is the story. What is Rain World all about?
I think we have sort of a few different things going on different planes. So first of all, we have the individual story of the main character, which is shown a little bit in the intro sequence. And I think it's not a spoiler to tell that it's about this creature being separated from its tribe or its family of other creatures like it, and trying to find its way back, I suppose. But then we also have some more deep going stuff, like more history or lore related stuff that you might be able to piece together if you play the world and pay close attention. And that we can't say very much about at all.
We can tease a little bit though.
You tease a little bit.
So you're this little creature, you're this little animal creature, and you're crawling through like the remains of some broken city or broken buildings, and you kind of have to start wondering, like, well, what happened to the people that lived in these places before? Clearly, the slug cat didn't build these big machines.
Yeah.
Neither did the lizards or any of the other things that you're seeing. So as you're going along, hopefully you're piecing together some sort of, like, question of what happened to all these people. And the answer is sort of there.
It might be there.
It might be there. And then there's
parts of it.
Yeah, and then there's deeper lore stuff to that too, which we're really hoping people will start theorizing about soon. That's, I think, one of the things that we're most anticipating.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. See if people can like put those little scattered pieces together into some coherence.
We already have people posting like all these weird fan theories, and I can't wait to read them. Oh my god.
How does the environment affect the way you play the game? Because I remember playing the demo, I want to say last year of Ringworld, and I remember like when it starts downpouring, you gotta get all the way up to the top and such, so I'm wondering how often we're gonna see these sorts of like different environmental hazards appear throughout Ringworld.
Well, considering the game is called Ringworld, we had to kill it with the rain. So the rain is like a key component of your daily play cycle. Basically, you wake up, you're in your little shelter, you wake up and you have to go out into the world to find food before the next cycle of rains come. And the thing is, while you're hunting food, everything else in the world is hunting food too. So you have this kind of pressure cooker situation where everything has a brief period of time that it can hunt enough food. So you're hunting food, things are hunting you, and you're finding new shelters before the rains come. But basically, I mean, we have different environments where things flood, where there's like electrical storms and stuff like that. But mostly it's all the same. It's like offshoots of the same basic. You have a period of time to eat and then death before if you don't find shelter.
Now, what sort of enemies or even allies will you be finding as you roam about Ringworld?
I think the one everyone has seen, which is like the basic foe, or the basic antagonist of Ringworld, is the neon lizard. Mm-hmm. So it's a sort of lizard salamander, strange creature which has a glowing head and emits bubbles, and it's like that. And then you have just a bunch of creatures. There are so many of them, and the idea is that it's not really necessarily defined that this creature is an enemy and this creature is an ally, but rather all of the creatures just exist for themselves, so to speak. Like, they are out there to get something to eat, and they will eat what looks tasty, and they will flee from what looks dangerous. So you have some creatures that eat each other, and some creatures that flee from you, and some creatures that hunt you, etc., etc. And you can actually also influence the opinion that creatures have of you, so you can make an ally of an enemy, and vice versa.
My favorite. I like the lizard.
How do they what?
How does the player do that?
Changing a creature's opinion?
Yeah, so it basically, like, while you're playing, the creatures are sort of learning from their experiences with you. If you play aggressively towards a lizard, it'll remember it next time. Perhaps it'll respond aggressively if you threw a spear at it.
Yes.
Perhaps it'll run away.
So it's like the program kind of learns from your actions.
Yes.
Yeah, they do. And also one thing I think which is sort of unique is that some of the creatures in the game can sort of like read your body language a little bit. So if you are very obnoxious and like jumping at them and running at them and like throwing rocks above their head or whatever, then they will think less of you. Whereas if you take it slow and easy, they will be more inclined to like you.
So that's how Skynet happened.
Yeah, basically.
So, which creature are you most excited for players to be introduced to in Ringworld? Like, which is the one you're like so stoked for, like, people to be like, oh, I can't wait for you to meet this one?
That's an awesome question. Let's each do one.
All right.
Sure, what's yours?
I think we have a creature which is the Leviathan. It's like a huge squid monster that eats everything that falls into the water. I'm excited to see people react to that.
Del, what's yours?
Oh, I was going to say the Leviathan. Now I don't know.
Eat you to it.
Because I don't want to say anything without getting too spoilery, you know? I don't want to ruin anything. I do want to see people interact with the corruption.
Oh.
The daddy long legs.
Yeah. That's weird stuff. No one's seen that stuff yet, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yep.
There is one that the gift that you posted.
Oh, yeah, that Sean's posting that? That's true. But no one's seen the corruption yet, I don't think. The proper corruption.
Okay.
Stop talking about it.
The proper corruption.
Anyways, moving on. What's the list?
Well, I was actually involved in the creation of this one, so I'm pretty excited about the Lantern Mice. People might have seen gifs of them. I think they're adorable, and yeah, it was really fun just seeing that like come to life.
What are they?
Well, they're these little mice that hang from the ceiling and they light up. They're literally lantern mice. You can actually use them as a light source in certain areas of the game. So,
and pretty they're cool. Definitely the cutest animal in there, I think.
Cute and hyperactive.
Scurrying around.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see. So there's a horrifying one. It's like basically all of my nightmares combined. And it's in a dark region, and I can't... I'm not going to say anything about it, because the experience is just so... But, like, I can't wait to see YouTubers, like, crying and when this happens.
Alright, I gotta ask you, Lydia, about... Because you mentioned you do a lot of the sound effects, you do a lot of the, like... You speak for, like, all the creatures... How did you, like, go about saying, okay, this is how this creature should sound, how should this one sound? Like, how did you know how to differentiate between them?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is, like, James and I will sort of agree on what it should sound like, and then he usually ends up, production-wise, manipulating it more. So I'll start off with some sort of bass sound, and then...
I'd say you usually have a pretty clear idea.
I mean, I do, but, like...
Lydia's a really good mimic. She, like, makes lots of strange noises.
Well, I'm a
noises.
Singer, and, yeah, I like sounds. So, like, yeah, you just kind of, like, think about the creature, look at the creature, and sort of, like, think about what it sounds like from there. It's, I mean, that's sort of a vague answer, but that's basically...
We definitely look like mad people when we're doing that. Because I'll be like, no, more like... Or like meep meep meep, and she'll be like meep meep, and I'll be like, no, could you do it a slightly more meep like? And yeah. it goes on for a bit. It's really fun though. Really fun process.
It kind of sounds like when you go the meep meep, it reminds me of the Iz characters from the cartoon The Max.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. Yep.
All right. Lydia, you know this one had to be coming towards you. Can you do a little bit of a demonstration of a couple of the creatures that you're gonna be playing as?
Do the lantern mice. Professional.
That's accurate.
It's almost as if we recorded those and used them in the game.
All right, I won't make Lydia do any more. Okay. Alright, so how does the Slug Cat evolve throughout Rainworld? Like, do we see him, like, growing as a character or doing something new as the game progresses?
Actually, specifically, no. You sort of grow emotionally, and you as the player grow through your observation of the world, like understanding how the ecosystem works. But I think in general, we wanted to create a game where there was no RPG progression. You don't get more buff. You know, Metroidvania games, you kind of start out and you're this like super weak, underpowered thing, and everything in the world is scary because everything can kill you. But then as you progress, you gain levels and you get like hell death missiles 9,000. And by the
end, you magically grow a six pack.
Yeah, exactly. You grow a six pack on your six pack, and you're just like this walking death machine, and nothing can kill you. I hate that at the end of the game. I love the beginning when you're afraid of everything. So we made this game where basically throughout the entire game, you're afraid of everything. You never become a badass. You have to
never grows pecs and buff arms.
No pecs, no buff arms. The only thing that that empowers you is your like knowledge of how the world works. And I think that's pretty unique. I think that's something interesting, and hopefully players find that interesting and not infuriating.
You know, it kind of adds a bit of realism to the game, because if you think about it, like say that you get lost in the woods and you have to like forage through berries, you gotta forage through like special foods. You're not gonna grow up to like to be this like big strong individual within a week or so. They're probably gonna find you if you're still alive, like this really scrawny, like dehydrated character. And I feel like you're presenting that in Rainworld.
Yeah, that was definitely the intention. We wanted to create like a de-empowerment fantasy rather than a power fantasy.
So, I know you touched a little bit about this, but what can you tell us about the multiplayer aspect, when it's going to be added into the game? Like, has it all changed since I first saw it at Boston Fig like 3 years ago?
Yeah, I'm actually working on that right now, and I can say as much. It's going to be sort of similar, I think. For those who remember it, we had a multiplayer game concept which, at least in my opinion, worked pretty well, and currently I'm like setting that game type up. But the fun part is that now we have so much more creatures to throw in the arenas. So it becomes extremely
chaos.
Yeah. So you have rooms, basically, and you're playing kind of head-to-head competitively, up to four players. But then the rooms will have, like, the specific rooms that you're in, that you bring up as your multiplayer maps, all have, like, creature hazards, basically. So you have vultures swooping down on you, leviathans, like, snapping up from the water below, and you're just trying to, like, hunt bats and, like, stab each other, and it's it's madness. It's a lot of fun.
Yes. We did some multiplayer... We played through together. In the evenings at PAX.
It's unfinished. It's unfinished and ugly, but it's really fun.
Yeah.
So we're confident with it.
It's so
long
fun.
As it's fun, it's all that matters.
Yeah, totally. We're also no promises on this one, but we want to do co-op as well. There's a couple different ways we can implement it. So we kind of just need time to poke at it and see what works.
Ooh, that sounds really cool. Get that ready in time for Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah, that's honestly sort of the timeline for it too. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Now, if there is one thing you hope players take away from the Rainworld experience, what do you hope that is?
I feel like that should be a Jor question. You should take that one.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the atmosphere. Like, I would be very happy if the atmosphere was unique enough and distinct enough to sort of linger in a person's mind, because as an art project, so to speak, Rainworld is inspired by things you see around you, and I think if you get that lingering atmosphere, then maybe you can see a little bit of Rainworld in the real world. That doesn't make any sense, but
no,
yeah,
that
makes kind of sense.
I think that was perfect.
Okay.
It gave me nightmares. I think it should give everybody else nightmares, too. That would be a good takeaway.
You're like saying, I suffered through this, now you have to suffer through it, too.
Exactly. Exactly. Precisely.
All right. We're going to take one more break, and then when we come back, we're going to wrap things up very nicely with the Rainworld crew. So... right now, we're going to spin a little Miwa, whose latest album, Splash World, we gave 4 out of 5 stars to. From that record is Ayo Kelly.
キュッと離さないで 過去を確か二人で巻き戻したレコード、君を守りたいんだ。
もしも願い叶うのなら
一人なんてしないから、
ずっとその手繋いでいて。
私幸せだよ。明日太陽が昇らないとしても溢れる愛に包まれていたから、
thank you.
a little instrumental number from Envy that was Fading Vision from their Abyssal EP. The band is currently working on new music while at the same time seeking a new vocalist to replace frontman Tetsuya Fukugawa, who left the group last year. And we've got the Rain World crew here, of course, and I guess we have a couple more final questions, and I guess the first question is, or rather, a challenge. And that challenge is, pitch to the audience. Why should people dive into Rain World?
Ooh, that's rough. Oh, everyone's pointing to me. Okay, okay. I'll beat them down. So, I don't know, like, I don't think Rain World's a game for everybody. I think Rain World, the sort of person who likes Rain World sees Rain World and they like it. There's a certain connection with it. There's like an empathy towards the creature. You can sort of tell that there's kind of weird stuff going on with it. Yeah, I don't really have much of a pitch. I think 2 years ago, I was definitely like, Rain World is a survival platformer, blah, blah, blah. But at this point, I think like I'm comfortable with what we've created, and I'm comfortable with people liking it, and I'm comfortable with people disliking it. Maybe we've just like transcended that element. But if you like Slug Cats, this is the game for you.
So it's a game for everybody, because who doesn't like Slug Cats?
Seriously.
More about just like random creature discovery.
Yeah, if you like climbing up some huge structure in the rain with like weird creatures snapping at you, and it's dark, and you've got these like glowing glyphs that you can't understand. If that sounds appealing to you, this is definitely the game.
If you like nightmare fuel, that's also a good perfect game for you.
Yeah, there will be at least one creature or thing in the game that will creep you out like more than the other. I'm pretty sure of that. We all have our own.
Jorah's really good at like actualizing phobias. Like if you have a phobia, he's gonna make it into a creature and it's gonna bother you.
Alright, so the game is partly finished. The single-player mode is finished. The game is coming out next week, March 28th, on PC and PS4. I know you guys are working on tinkering with the multiplayer, maybe co-op, but I have to ask, because of how long you guys have been working on this, are you taking a well-deserved break as soon as like the game is released?
Unfortunately, probably not.
Probably not.
Like, this is kind of our break here. We're doing this little, like, we're hanging out in New York with friends. We're gonna go to a tea shop after this. Mm-hmm. That's kind of our break. But it's kind of rough when you're really doing what you want to do because you want to keep doing it. So although we're all exhausted, we're all, like, really excited to, like, get into the next steps of it. And
2 weeks ago, I actually uploaded the final build, which would be the Steam build, to just for games to like grab, and that was the end of those 4 years or whatever of development. And then I opened up my code editor and I got started on multiplayer
immediately. Didn't even slow down.
Yeah.
All right, that's all uploaded. Well, time to get into this part of the game then.
Yep.
Now, I do have to ask, I know you guys have been super busy with this game. I know that this has been a long and challenging experience for you all. Rain World finally coming out. But I do have to ask, are the gears turning for the next idea you all have for a video game?
It would be one gear, only one gear turning. Because it's going to be Flappy Slug Cat. It's going to be something like there's one button and there's like two levels. Something simple. Tone the ambition down a little bit, for at least a little while.
Right. Like, don't expect Rain World VR just yet.
No, thank you.
Oh, I do have to admit, though, that would be quite the experience, seeing some of those creatures in VR.
Oh, no.
If you thought the single-player side-scroller was nightmare fuel.
Evan, you don't put those ideas out there. Now we're going to get tweets about it. Adult Swim's going to be like, hey,
no.
So you consider it a VR version.
No. They'll appear as, like, cameos in Rick and Morty VR.
I'm okay with that.
So I guess my final question is, because with you guys being indie developers and such, working really hard on this game, what sort of advice can you give to any game developer out there who desires to create something new and unique like you guys did with Rain World?
Ooh,
would you say to start out with, Jor?
It's a very difficult one. I guess keep at it, right? And also visibility, I think, is really good. Like, I had a devlog early on, and I posted every day, and even though I was in school, etc., I could do a little bit of work every day, and I could make a little post every day about what I did. And I think in the devlog, which is for development blog community, it's extremely appreciated to be consistent. Like, if you have a post every day, then people will really like that, and they will come there and they will get to know you, and they will talk to you about your project. And that's extremely super, super important to keep motivated and keep at it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the key point. Like, I have a lot of friends who are developers and are sort of like earlier on their journey to making their huge absurd project. And I think that, not to say that there's mistakes being made, but like, you need to do this publicly. You need people to champion your game. You need people to see what you're doing. Because, like, even if you're creating a masterpiece in your basement, if no one can see it...
Yeah, people have to be invested.
And so Jor's devlog on TIGSource for Ringworld is the longest-running devlog. It's 6 years. It's 300 pages. It's totally, totally insane. And you don't have to do something that wild, but you need it to be something where people can pick it up, people can see it, and people can get invested in it so they can help champion your game. Because you can't do it alone.
No. Definitely not. Another thing I think I've learned from just being a part of the team is deadlines are good and all, but if you have a deadline and you don't make it, like, it's okay. Things, especially if it's like your first game, everything takes longer than you think it's going to take.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be comfortable, like, making mistakes and missing deadlines and stuff. You just have to keep it up. Like, the one thing I think that's the worst is when people just put down a project. They'll get, like, they have a good idea, they'll get a solid amount of work through, and they'll hit some stumbling point, and rather than just persevere or, like, suck it up that they have to redo this or that, they just, like, put the project down. And that's death. That's the end. If you can, whatever you can do to not do that, whatever you can do to push through, is infinitely better than putting a project down. That's my perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of the best advice you could give to all of the game developers out there. So, Jawar, James, Lydia, Dell, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race this week. Ringworld out on March 28th on PC and PS4. Is there anything else you guys want to plug while we're at it?
Well, I just want to say, Evan, thank you so much for having us on the show. That was a fantastic interview.
Yeah,
great questions. Thank you. Had a really good time.
Thank you.
World peace. World peace.
World peace.
Yeah.
So, all right. I guess I now have to do my promo stuff. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, or if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at KingBabyDuckESH, on the J-pop, anime, and video games amino pages at KingBabyDuckESH, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/omnistryinc. Like us on facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade and on facebook.com/LandOfEsh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smash Rook, and Nerd Crade. And special thanks to Maria Bartolotta from the record company. You've got a great lineup on your hands with this Beast record. I hope everyone gets a chance to listen to it. Guys, thank you once again for being on No Borders, No Race. I cannot wait to dive into Ringworld as soon as it launches in a couple weeks. I have a really good feeling it's going to be probably one of the most unique side-scrollers out there of 2017.
Woo!
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And today's final act, of course, comes from the Beast compilation album again, one more time, with the avant-garde rock band Bent Knee. They're all graduates of Boston's Berklee College of Music, and last year saw the release of their third record, Say So. This song is called These Hands. And until next time, this is your King David Duck Evan Borgo. That's the part where you guys introduce yourselves again.
Oh, sorry. What do we say? I was like, oh no, did my phone disconnect again?
Yeah, no, me too.
We're Rainworld. Bye.
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 Reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps. Slugcats rule.
Smell the fear. I drop a dime in the alley. Glimmers to bring in the news. These steady hands are trying, though they've done nothing for you.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.